Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 11, 2015. South Sudan's warring parties are reported to be fighting each other in Upper Nile State 1 week after peace talks collapse in Addis Ababa.
Rain was bombed. It happened. And we told you the rebels are moving towards the youth. We are on maximum alert in the youth.
And as the United Nations moves closer to imposing sanctions on South Sudanese leaders, some people worry the move will hurt everyone, not just a few.
There is no dollar in the bank. That means when we sell South Sudanese pound, we have South Sudanese pound, but we don't have dollar. No any other country to accept South Sudanese pound. So we cannot do anything. That's why not easy to import.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Less than a week after peace talks for South Sudan were suspended in Addis Ababa, military officials say columns of rebels allied with rebel leader Riek Machar are advancing on Ayot County in Jonglei State. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says the rebels are moving from Upper Nile State towards Ayot County. Aguer says the rebel advance follows clashes last week between the two sides in several parts of Upper Nile State. Aguer says the SPLA is brushing for
attack from the rebels. I told you last time we were expecting attack in Dukduk and it happened. Rain was bombed. It happened. And we told you the rebels are moving towards Ayot. We are on maximum alert in Ayot.
Ayot County is around 100 miles north of the Jonglei State capital, Bor. The county has changed hands between the army and rebel forces several times since fighting broke out in December 2013. It is currently under government control. Aguer says the army is ready to defend the county, which lies in a strategic corridor linking Upper Nile to Unity State.
If they are intending to attack a youth, we are prepared. Our soldiers are on maximum alert.
Aguer says government forces also clashed yesterday with the rebels in Manyo County in Upper Nile State. He was unable to go into detail about the fighting because he has not yet had a report from the ground. VOA tried unsuccessfully to reach the rebels for comment on Aguer's allegations. Fighting erupted in several parts of Upper Nile State late last week, just after peace talks between President Salva Kiir and Machar were suspended indefinitely. The two sides have failed to reach an agreement on how to end 15 months of fighting in South Sudan that has killed tens of thousands and forced 2 million people from their homes. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations has moved a step closer toward imposing sanctions on South Sudanese leaders accused of perpetuating the ongoing conflict in the country. But as VOA's Gabe Joslo reports, with the economy already weakened by runaway inflation and rampant corruption, the worry is that sanctions, even if targeted, could cause even more widespread damage.
At the Gumbo Market in South Sudan's capital, Juba, stall owners squint into the sun as the workers offload truckloads of onions, pineapples, sugarcane, and mangoes imported by road from Uganda and Kenya. Some say business is okay. Others say it could be better, as traders usually do. But they all agree on one thing. The value of the dollar is way too high.
I'm Moses. I'm a businessman here, selling Irish potatoes and whatever.
Moses says the high exchange rate for the South Sudanese pound is putting too much pressure on traders.
Business is fair. Dollar problem. The dollar is high, man. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why is it that it is high. I don't know. Things are bad. We are going back to Uganda. Yeah, things are now.
Pound is down, dollar is high.
We're going to stop anytime because no profits now. No profits.
South Sudan receives most of its U.S. dollars from the sale of oil, but the ongoing conflict has greatly reduced output, meaning the central bank has fewer dollars available. The low price of oil worldwide may also be adding to the strain. This, in turn, is pushing up the black market exchange rate against the South Sudanese pound, which now stands at about 6.5 pounds to the dollar, more than twice the official rate. An Ethiopian businesswoman in Juba, Bereket Adera Worki, explains the problem like this.
So there is no dollar in the bank. That means when we sell South Sudanese pound, we have South Sudanese pound, but we don't have dollar. No any other country to ask accept South Sudanese pound. So we cannot do anything. That's why not easy to import.
Inflation is the first, most obvious pressure on businesses here. The second is corruption.
Corruption. Corruption is too much here. So that is the only problem here. But there is no any other problem.
This is Stephen Mugesha, another trader at Gumbo Market. He explains that driving from the Ugandan border to Juba, about 200 kilometers, means stopping at numerous tax stations and paying bribes to police officers along the way.
One man can come to you and say that you pay £200, then after paying him, then another one come that you pay like £300. So that is a problem here.
Now add the third pressure to the scenario, the threat of sanctions. On March 3rd, the United Nations Security Council approved the possibility of imposing asset freezes on those responsible for the 15-month conflict in South Sudan to pressure them into reaching a peace deal by the March 5th deadline. That deal did not happen. While the sanctions would be targeted, South Sudanese economist James Garang of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies worries such a move could have a wider impact.
I think they may have a bite, because when you target individuals, you indirectly target the innocent bystanders, the civilian population.
Garang says putting the squeeze on bank accounts in Switzerland or New York, for example, may encourage the country's elite to plunder accounts at home.
If they cannot access their account, they will access an account here in Juba. Someone may take the salary of the army, some part of it they do, and take it away, or the means of finance. And so they, if you prevent them from touching their own, and the rules are so weak, they're likely to graft from what belongs to the public, and there's no way to prevent them that.
Last year, the United States imposed some limited sanctions on individuals in South Sudan. The UN consideration of sanctions is only the latest sign of growing frustration in the international community with the failure of both sides in the conflict to commit to reach a peace deal, which all sides agree is the only sure way to bring much-needed stability to the fractured state. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Juba.
Officials from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area flatly deny that anyone from the Murle community is responsible for the abduction of two children in Bor town earlier this week. Jacob Achek has the story for VOA from Bor.
On Sunday evening, a group of unknown raiders by Fazid organized government forces stationed in several Jonglei state villages around Bor and entered Bor town, where they kidnapped a 5-year-old girl and a 3-year-old boy. They also wounded the child, grandmother, and a 17-year-old boy. Both were transferred to Bor Teaching Hospital, where they remain in serious condition. Bor County officials accused Murle tribesmen of carrying out the attack. The Greater Pibor Administrative Area Information Minister Sam David instantly dismissed the accusation.
If Murle wanted to attack people in Bor, they cannot leave other around in Bor and went to attack Block 9 inside Bor town. Secondly, we have organized forces, including Ugandan forces in Bor. They are around Jonglei to protect this type thing. This issue concerning cattle riders and killing people, suspecting Murle, is not something new in Bor. If they are want to plan something against Murle, they will circulate something wrong in Jonglei state, but not Murle.
Debit in this cattle rustling and child abduction is stopped after the signing of Sudanese Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which in 2015.
Think about themselves, they have conflict. If it could be like that, maybe this is their own in Jonglei state. But we are apart from that. This is the accusation always from Bor. Within Bor, there is some criminal who are just abduct their children among Denkabor himself. And they are just considered saying this is a criminal came from Murle.
David said there were footprints leading away from the crime scene, and he called on Jonglei State officials to follow them. Jonglei State Minister of Law Enforcement Peter Wallace said a group of armed people suspected to be Murile attacked an isolated home in the Tibek area and grabbed children before fleeing.
More than 50 years, these activities is taking place here in the Bor area, Nuer area, the Mundari area, so all the region and sub-region.
Philip Thorn-Nyok, a member of parliament representing Bo Town constituency, chastised Greater Pibor official for accusing Dinga of abducting their own children in Bor. He said that in 2012, two Murile criminals were caught in Du County and were handed over to Jonglei State Central Prison officials. And he said later that year, three criminals from the Murile community were killed in Anyidi.
I think it is now going to 2 months, but the Murilis are roaming about in the Bor area. They are found elsewhere, and they are being reported by the ladies who go for collecting fruit and the rest of people who go cutting trees.
A rebel group called the South Sudan Democratic Army, or SSDA, is suspected of carrying out the recent attack. It used to be led by the deputy Yao Yao, now the head of the Greater Pibor administration. Yao Yao signed a peace agreement with the South Sudan government in May of 2014. Since that time, many observers say child abduction is stopped in most areas of Bor County. But earlier this year, Bor County Commissioner Mame Rook said criminals from Greater Pibor area resumed child abduction and cattle rustling. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Members of South Sudan Army are being accused of killing wildlife illegally. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are the most profitable businesses in your country?
The most profitable business in my country is construction materials, which make development very easier.
We don't have specific business that people deal with because our South Sudan is not a good place for cultivation. Normally, it's a desert place, general.
Most of businessmen are investing in bringing taxis in South Sudan in order to facilitate transportation.
In my country, the most profitable business that I see nowadays is the boutiques they open up, the salons and the restaurants, the hotels they do, because most youths are depending on making their hair, dressing up, going out for clubbing and so on.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese officials are accusing members of the army, including officers, of killing wildlife and then eating them for meat or selling it. The head of South Sudan's National Wildlife Service, Major General Philip Chol, says the army should be conserving wildlife for future generations, not illegally killing it for personal benefits. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking to reporters in Juba today, a visibly angry Chol displayed hundreds of kilograms of dried bush meat that he says was seized from an unnamed army officer on Tuesday.
When we count these animals, maybe they are reaching to something of 20 animals. And this was only caught in the hand of one colonel of the army, the SPLA.
Chol says wildlife officers are working with the police to prosecute the SPLA officer. He says other officers have also been caught with large quantities of bush meat. Chol laments that the army is breaking laws that protect South Sudan's rich biodiversity when they should be enforcing them.
There are law enforcement. Instead of respecting the laws of wildlife, there are the people destroying, even taking the law into their hands.
Chol says South Sudan should follow the example of its neighbors and work to preserve wildlife instead of taking steps that could drive some species to extinction.
I don't know if we finish this wildlife in the Republic of South Sudan. Where are we going to get it? I mean, everybody is talking about Kenya and Uganda and all the benefit of wildlife while we are destroying ours here.
Last year, conservationists said the ongoing conflict in South Sudan has led to a rise in illegal poaching. They said both rebels and government forces were slaughtering bush animals for their meat to feed their fighters. Chol says some army officers have started selling poached bush meat to make money. He says that poses an even greater threat to South Sudan's wildlife.
If you shot one for consumption, there is no very big dangerous. But if you are now making ideas of taking this meat to the market, automatically this will affect the whole population wildlife in South Sudan.
South Sudan has a variety of wild animals, including elephants, giraffes, buffalo, and lions. It is also home to one of the largest seasonal animal migrations in Africa, when species of antelope, including the white-eared cob, gazelles, tiang or korrigam, and reedback, move across centuries-old migration corridors in search of food and water. The mass migrations have survived decades of war, but now poaching could endanger the wild animals. Chol says soldiers camp in game parks and along the migratory corridors that the animals take. They have one aim, to kill the animals, Chol says. He says wildlife officers have been dispatched to try to stop the illegal poaching. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says the wildlife department must work with divisional commanders throughout the country to stop soldiers and officers from hunting wild animals. Aguirre also accuses rebels allied to Riek Machar of carrying out most of the poaching. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we now move to Burkina Faso. A unique school in Burkina Faso brings together students who might otherwise have a language barrier. The school, called SEPSI, teaches both hearing and deaf students. The NGO Light for the World says it is one of the few schools in the world to offer both spoken and sign language. Jace Blakers, Light for the World's program coordinator for Burkina Faso, tells VOA's Kim Lewis inclusive education is life-changing for students.
I think what makes it really unique is just you feel inclusion as soon as you come in the door. So you have children with and without disabilities just playing in the playground together, and you just feel it all around you. So it's something SEPSI started as an inclusive school from the very beginning, and I think that's what makes it really special, is that they try and they sort of really live the inclusion and live inclusive education.
Just recently, International Mother Language Day was celebrated, and in that it was highlighted that sign language is a mother language for people who are deaf. So how does this fit in with the school? What are the students there learning to do?
What happens is they're really encouraged to communicate in their mother tongue, and it's just recognized that it's so important not only for communication but also for sort of intellectual development and creative development of an individual. So the kids are just encouraged to learn and to interact in that mother tongue, and to make that possible, the teachers know sign language. There are sign language interpreters that assist the teachers during the teaching, and between the pupils, the hearing pupils also know sign language, so they learn it from a very young age as well, which sort of overcomes this barrier of the hearing and non-hearing not being able to communicate, not being able to interact.
So for those students who do hear, when they go to school, are they taught sign language before they are taught anything else so that they can interact with the children who are deaf?
The classes all at the same time of sign language. I think the hard of hearing and deaf kids get specific support and sort of extra classes in sign language as well as they start, basically. But yeah, the kids are all taught together, and obviously the hard of hearing and deaf children can communicate much better in sign language, but they can all do it and they can all understand, and you can see between the students that they sort of help each other. So a hearing child will help a non-hearing child to sort of understand what's going on in the classroom. So they all learn it together.
How does this help them out in the world, both the hearing and the non-hearing students?
For the non-hearing students, I think it's just, on the one hand, the opportunity of education, which is not something that comes naturally, whether it's in Africa or in Europe, to be honest, or in North America, I assume it's the same. So it's the opportunity of education, which also leads to the opportunity of employment, more independent living. But it's beyond that, social inclusion for these non-hearing kids to be able to interact, as I said, with their peers, basically, whether they're disabled or not, is just an amazing opportunity for social inclusion and for them just being more settled and feeling as if they can really make a contribution to society. And I really think that it helps the hearing kids as well, so the non-disabled kids, to just have from the very start of their lives a different attitude about disability. They start off thinking that it's normal whether you have a disability or not. Everybody can learn and everybody can be together and everybody can live together, basically. So I think it's really a game changer for those non-disabled kids as well.
There are not many inclusive education schools throughout the world. So do you see this as a school of the future with more of them?
It would be a dream if you could see little syphilis growing everywhere in the world. Nobody is perfect and no school will be able to do it absolutely perfect from the start. And I think that's what I really appreciate about syphilis, is that they try it out and the efforts that they make already a huge contribution to what we said about social inclusion opportunities. And they show that it's possible, basically, if you put enough effort into it and you really think about how you're going to make your school inclusive. And obviously it goes beyond physical inclusion. It goes into training of teachers, into attitudes, into all of these things. They show that it's possible and that you can start somewhere and make a real difference for these children.
That's Jesse Blakers of Light for the World's coordinator for Burkina Faso, speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Vienna, Austria. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Excuse me. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says Boko Haram fighters are being trained at camps run by Islamic State militants in the Middle East. The president's statement comes 4 days after Boko Haram's leader publicly challenged allegiance to ISIS. Mr. Jonathan tells VOA, "We know the links are there between the two groups." Key members of U.S. President Barack Obama's national security team testified before a Senate committee hearing in Washington today. They fielded lawmakers' questions about the presidential request to use force against Islamic State militants. Mr. Obama last month proposed an authorization of force that would last 3 years with limits on the use of ground troops. And finally, a member of the Kremlin's Human Rights Council says there are reasons to believe the prime suspect in the killing of Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov confessed under torture. Andrei Babushkin told reporters today that he had seen numerous wounds on the body of Zaur Dadayev during a visit to the suspect's prison cell yesterday. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
A new report ranks countries according to the disaster risk faced by all the people. It says those in Somalia, Central African Republic, and Afghanistan face the highest risk due to conflict and lack of social services. The findings are being released prior to the United Nations World Conference on Disaster Risk Reduction in Saidie, Japan. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
HelpAge International has released its first Disaster Risk and Age Index, which evaluates 190 countries. It's estimated 66% of those 60 years old and above live in less developed countries. HelpAge says that figure is expected to rise to nearly 80% by 2050. That's over 2 billion people. Toby Porter is HelpAge CEO.
There's quite rightly enormous interest globally at the moment in disaster risk reduction. I think an understanding that the world needs to invest in helping communities prepare for disasters and be more resilient when they do happen. But something that hasn't been so well internalized or understood is how vulnerable older people are to disasters and more vulnerable than other members of the community.
He gives 2005's Hurricane Katrina as an example. The storm slammed into the southern U.S. city of New Orleans.
The population of New Orleans, the day the levees broke, the breakdown was that only 16% of the population that day was age 60 or older. And yet the statistics we have is that 75% of the men and women who lost their lives that day were aged 60 or over. I mean, it's the most extraordinary statistic.
And 56% of those who died in Japan's 2011 tsunami were age 65 and older, even though they made up only 23% of the population.
Obviously, there are certain physical infirmities that come with older age. So, for example, a decreased ability to exit fast from an area where there may be a tsunami wave coming, or to flee in security. There may be an instance whereby communities use disaster drills with whistles or sirens. You might have an older person in the community who may be hard of hearing. You might get someone who's housebound and not able to see the dangers coming.
Porter says protection of older populations will only grow in importance.
The population is getting older, which is a wonderful thing. The reason that populations are getting older is because we're all living in an era where every year people can expect to live longer and healthier lives. Often people think that population aging is just a developed world phenomenon, or concentrated in countries like the US and Canada and Western Europe. But actually, populations are aging around the world, and the fastest growing regions are Asia and Latin America.
He says the world must adapt its healthcare, economies, and social welfare to an aging population.
If you speak to an older person, regardless of which country, regardless of which culture or religion or background they come from, they'll often talk about four major concerns. What kind of health am I in? Do I feel that I have enough money? Am I safe and living free from violence, discrimination, or other forms of elder abuse? And fourth and very important one, am I listened to? Do I have a say? Is my voice heard?
The top 10 countries where older people are most at risk are Somalia, Central African Republic, Afghanistan, Sudan, Yemen, South Sudan, Myanmar, the DRC, Syria, and Iraq. There are 17 sub-Saharan African countries among the top 30 where older people are most at risk. The HealthAge chief executive officer says he sees encouraging signs for older people as the Sustainable Development Goals take shape. The UN meets late this year to finalize the replacements for the Millennium Development Goals. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that report by Joe DiCapua brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Mutshirbara by Kofi Olomide. We've been listening to Kofi Olomide with the song Mutshirbara. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kamalondo.